Hey guys, you're listening to the most captivating podcast in iTunes. That's right, the Elite Man Podcast, where we turn average men into elite men every day. We interview the very best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and even entrepreneurial worlds. And with their help, we give you some of the best advice on the planet. Subscribe now if you haven't already and enjoy the show. And oh yeah, if you really enjoy it, leave us a review.
Hey guys, just a quick reminder, you are listening to the Elite Man Podcast. Throughout this episode, the word Giving Shy Guys Game Podcast may be referenced or referred to several times. These were just some of our earlier episodes, and I just wanted to remind you, you are still listening to the Elite Man Podcast. Okay guys, enjoy the show. On today's episode, episode number 24, entitled Becoming a Mixed Martial Arts Champion, we chat with one of the best MMA welterweights in the world, Carl Parisian. Carl, can you just tell our listeners about your background and how you began fighting? I know you started judo very early on. Can you just tell our listeners a little about that?
I was 9 years old, and my cousin came to my house. He's a couple of years younger than me, and started talking all big that he can kick my butt and stuff. And I was like, you know, what do you mean you can kick my butt? Well, I've been doing judo and all this stuff. And then we just started guy talking, and I told my dad I wanted to go. And my cousin's dad was like, okay, I'll take you with me on Monday. You can sign up. So they took me and signed up for judo, and the rest is history.
Cool. And you competed for years after that. Did you do the Olympics or anything like that? Did you get really competitive into judo?
Yeah. I won everything in the country and won nationals. Junior nationals, I won five internationals, got U.S. Open, and then I was ranked third in the country, and then the top five went for the Olympic trials. I was in the trials, but UFC came knocking in 2003, and in 2004 I was in the trials, which was about maybe like 5-6 months apart, so I just picked up the UFC. I was like, you know, I've been doing June all my life, you know. It's good, obviously, it got me where I am, but that's what it is. I paid for my skill set, you know? I paid to get somewhere. But, and then I just picked that up and tried to make a career out of it and make a living out of it, basically, and that's what I did.
And was that transition easy then, just to take the judo background that you had and then take it right into the UFC where you have, like, a million other different disciplines to work on?
Yeah, that's the thing. For me, it came easy. It came natural, thank God. I don't know why, but it did. You see, when I was doing judo and I would do like wrestling and throws it, it never really bugged me. It never crossed my mind that, well, I need, I need a gi, I need something to grab on while I can throw. It was a feel. It came down to like second nature. So when I got close to anybody, you know, when I engaged with them as far as, you know, clinching and stuff, it was really easy for me to throw somebody. And it worked out, man. I was already fighting since I was 14 years old. I was throwing people back then. So all the way up to when I was 21, I got in the UFC. And that's when everything changed, you know.
Do you feel like you became like a champion and such a great MMA fighter just through practice and like hard work? Or do you think it was kind of a combination of that plus like something you were just like born with, like you were almost born to be a fighter?
I had a certain discipline, obviously, in that I never really liked training. It came from my dad. My dad would push me a lot when I was younger. And then when I reached the age 16, that's when I started really liking the sport of judo. I always loved MMA. At the same time, I naturally had a gift. As you can see, I don't look like much. I don't look like a fighter that much at all. People mistake me for all kinds of stuff except being a fighter. And yeah, I guess that says a lot as far as me having the natural skill set. Yeah. What would you say?
About what?
Do I look like a fighter?
No, you just look like a regular guy, man. But yeah. That's the best part, right? Like kind of go under the radar and then you're just a badass by nature. So moving on, did you get into like any street fights like growing up or like did you try to kind of stay away from that because of like the discipline and that you knew you could pretty much like win any fight if it came down to it?
No, let me tell you something. I'm an Armenian kid that was brought up in LA. I mean, I was born in Armenia. I lived in Russia. And then I came to the States about 26, 27 years ago. growing up in L.A., you have to understand, in Hollywood and stuff, it's bound to happen. We are minorities at the, you know, we still are. And in school, there's a lot of problems, you know, growing up. So street fights, yeah, I've gotten a lot of street fights, a lot of stupid brawls, a lot of meaningless fights. But I don't know, dude. I mean, that was one of the reasons my dad got me in the sport, because I used to get in so many fights. I used to beat up my sisters. I was very, very active when it came to stupid stuff like that. And he was like, you know, like, go to this judo place or whatever and, you know, take your energy and your anger out. But, you know, fighting was a normal thing for any Armenian kid at my age. Fighting was a normal thing, obviously. Everybody got in fight, except when I was fighting. You know, I started doing judo since I was 9, and now when I, you know, started, you know, 10, 11, 12, and so on, even up to high school, I used to get in fights, even up to now, not that I get in any fights now, but, you know, it's happened here and there. There's always an idiot that'll fucking come up and think, you know, push his luck and tell you you think you're tough or something. You gotta make an example out of him. It's kind of hard to get in a fight on the streets. One, I don't want to get in a fight. I can care less about getting in fights, man. I make money with my hands and my throws and all that stuff. So I don't, and plus, you don't know what you can do with these idiots, you know? I mean, Literally, less than 30 seconds, you can kill somebody on the street if you want to. I mean, If I want to hurt somebody, I mean, really hurt somebody, dude, I can. I think any fighter can, especially if I pick somebody up and throw them on the side of the freaking street, you know, on a curb or something. His head's going to pop open. He can die or eat out of a head fucking straw for 6 months in the hospital. Street fights were stupid. It happened all the time. My friends would get in for me before I even got to the guys and stuff, just because they knew that mine was a little bit hard. I had to get my hands registered at the police station, that I have two guns on me all the time if I hit somebody, you know, all that stupid stuff. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Definitely, man. What do you feel like? What's your mindset before a fight? Not a street fight, but I mean like a professional fight. Like, do you get like obviously like there's nerves and stuff. Like, what are you thinking though? Like before you step into the cage?
Well, honestly, you know, when that fighter is like, well, I don't get nervous or this and that. It's okay to be nervous. That's natural. Everybody gets nervous. If you're not nervous, you're not human. Talking straight about nerves. It's okay to have butterflies, man. Just get into filing formation. You can have those butterflies. Basically, controlling your emotions, control your nerves. I've seen fighters that I can name right now, you'd be like, oh my God, really? Throw up in the back, turn blue, cry. I swear to God, tell me. Wow. They're like, I can't get out there, pressure's too much. These are champion fighters. Not all these guys, you think they're the toughest guys in the world. They're not. They're tough, but, you know, George St. Pierre is a buddy of mine. He's a good friend of mine. I fought him and all that stuff. George is a great guy, but George peed 35 times before he walked out the fight. Nerves are a big deal for everybody. For me, you know, yeah, I get nervous to a certain point, you know, just to keep me. I'm never, ever, you know, a lot of fighters are scared to fight other guys, you know. If you're scared to fight, you're in the wrong business. And if you're turning blue and crying and, you know, throwing a fit, you don't want to get out to fight, you're in the wrong business also. I don't really care, man. I've done it such a long time, from such a young age. Fighting for me is like drinking a glass of water. It's not that big of a deal because I don't look at it personally. I look at it as a sport. There's been times that, 45, 50 plus fights, there's been maybe a handful of times where I really just disliked my opponent and I took it personal and I really hurt him when I fought. But most of the time, when you look at it as a sport from that perspective, you change your mindset a little bit, you know? You don't have to get that nervous and that fucking terrified from getting out there to fight. For me, it's a normal thing.
Yeah. Is there a way, like, you have to kind of, like, manage, like, that adrenaline and kind of, so you don't have, like, an adrenaline crash or whatever if you get, like, too excited before a fight?
Oh, I never get that excited. You see, that's the thing for me. It's funny that people say, oh, I get excited to fight. Excitement and fighting for me does not mesh well together. Mm-hmm. Why would I be excited to walk out in front of 25,000, 30,000 people, more than half naked, have people love you, hate you. That's not exciting for me. Yeah, the thing about the concept, oh, it's exciting to get out and fight. I know people say that, but they have a different mindset about the excitement word. For me, it's not exciting. It's more of a, like, how do I say this, man? I got to look for the right word for this. It's not exciting. It's more of like anticipation. Like, I'm trying to anticipate what will happen. I'm a glory junkie. You know, I want to win. You know, I got all these emotions going through me. But as far as I'm so excited to walk out in the fight, no. You know, I mean, you see stars in the stands. You see actors that you watch all your life watching you fight. Doesn't do anything to me as far as I'm walking out. I'm in a, you know, I'm in a tunnel. I want to kick this guy's ass. Feel good about myself, make my money, and get out.
Yep. So would you say that you love fighting, or is it just more of like a way for you to make a living?
Good question. I used to love it a lot. I still do. I really do. I can't say I don't.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, once you get older, I'm 32 years old. I'm not that old. I can still fight, and I'm still fighting. But when you think about it, time comes and you get more resources. It's just like anything else in life, man. It's just like responsibilities pile up. You get older. You look at stuff from a different point of view. So I also have a job now. You know, when I was much younger, when I fought, I never really cared about the money. I just fought because I liked kicking old guys' asses. And I always did. But for me, you start making a little bit of money. You start to figure out, well, now I'm doing this. I got to invest or whatever it is. Responsibilities pile up. You buy cars. You buy houses. You buy jewelry. You take women out. Everything that you do, it's an investment also. So when you start making that money, now everything becomes more serious. It's just like anything else in life, you know. There's fights that I knew I could finish the guy, but I try to keep it safe just because I want to get that win bonus, which is the wrong thing, too. I mean, I'm opening up right now. I don't even care what anybody thinks. But today I would say I love it. At the same time, it's also a responsibility, and it's also a job.
Yep, absolutely. Carl, what's your greatest professional accomplishment?
Well, since I'm a judoka, I'm a judo practitioner, I'm also a fighter. I mean, in judo, I've won a lot of big tournaments. I would say the U.S. Open I've won. That's a pretty big accomplishment. The Pan Am Championships, which is a really big, the biggest tournament in Latin America. Canada actually comes to. I know it's a big tournament. I've won that. At the same time, becoming WBC world champion, number one contender in the UFC, you know, that was a pretty big accomplishment, I would say. It's a combination of things. I can't say specifically. I mean, if I took the title from the UFC when I had my title shot and I tore my hamstring with Matthews, I would say, yeah, I was a world champion or I am a world champion, whatever. But since, you know, it's a little bit of combination of stuff, I would say.
Was that torn hamstring during the fight or before that fight?
Oh, I never fought. It was before the fight. I was supposed to fight
canceled.
Matthews for the title. Yeah. And I tore my hamstring. Tore it, man, and lost my chance to fight for the title.
That fucking sucks.
Yeah. Tell me about it.
What was your favorite fight that you've done? Probably the fight that like pushed you the most, and that you maybe it was kind of back and forth and you didn't know if you were going to win, and then you like kind of came back and won. Was there something like
that's
that?
That's easy. That's a Nick Diaz fight.
Nick Diaz?
That
was a great fight.
Yeah, that was probably a fight that it was a little bit of back and forth. I've had fights like that, but like when I fought Drew Fickett, let's say, tough guy. I knew I had won. Even when I fought Diaz, I knew I had won, but it was like, you know, a back and forth situation, just a little bit. Round one, I won. Second round was kind of close, so it was like it was a toss up, and I had to come back. Third round, I had to do it. You know, it's an exhausting fight. You know, Nick is obviously a great fighter himself.
Yeah.
You know, champion. So I would say Nick Diaz fight was like you just exactly pointed out, kind of like a back and forth. You didn't know, and then you kind of prevailed. That was kind of one of the fights. I knew that I had fucking beat Diego's dumbass, but they screwed me on that scorecard. Dirty Sanchez.
Yeah. That was a good fight, too. I saw that one.
Yeah, that made top three fight of MMA history. So I don't really care about that, but I thought I won the fight, but they gave it to Diego.
Yeah, I thought you wanted to be honest. I'm not just saying that. I thought you wanted to, yeah.
Thank you. Thanks, man.
Yeah, no problem, man. So was that the Diaz one, like, your toughest fight as well, or was there another one that kind of comes to mind?
Toughest, Diaz was, I would say, one of the toughest. You mean the ones I've won, am I correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I didn't have that many losses in the UFC, but I would say Diaz one was a tough fight. Drew Fickett fight was a tough fight. Berkman wasn't that tough. I wanted to beat Berkman. Chris Lytle, not at all. Matt Serra, I almost got knocked out in the first 9 seconds when I came out, and I destroyed him on the scorecards.
He's got heavy hands, right? Did he catch you?
Yeah, the first 10 seconds, the same shot he hit St. Pierre with, he hit me on my chin. Pop. And so it was so solid that my neck snapped, and the guys like around the cage, like the press was like, we heard your neck snap. I'm like, oh my God, he broke his neck.
Wow.
But, and then I came back from a knockdown for round one, and I took over so bad that it was a 10-10 round. Second round was a 10-8. I swear to God, you can watch the fight. Second round was a 10-9 round. Third round, I had beaten Matt Serra. I love him to death. He's the greatest guy. He's one of the best fighters ever. But in reality, I had beaten him up so bad, dude. It was a 10-8 round. My elbows were... Randy Couture was cornering me. He was icing my elbows because I had hit him so many times with the elbows. And he was coughing blood. His eyes were jacked up. Like, I really give Matt Serra the worst beating ever. I mean, I've beaten a lot of guys up, but Matt Serra was... And he's got heart, man. I mean, he's got freaking heart. And that was... Again, he's a big name, but still, wasn't one of my toughest fights.
Yeah. And what was it like fighting GSP? How was that?
When I fought George, man, I had heard, he's so strong. He's this. I didn't think George St. Pierre was strong. George St. Pierre was very explosive. Very explosive. He's perfect for mixed martial arts. Another fight. I lost on the scorecards. I won round one. I lost round two. Round three was very close. I threw him over me, opened his arm up for an arm bar. I heard his arm, you know, making click noises, and he's such an honest guy because he's a really class act. After the fight, he told me, he said, I was literally 1 millisecond away from tapping. The armbar was so open, dude. He had his arm wrapped up and stuff, but I couldn't finish him, man. I was so tired. I had cut 16 pounds in a day and a half. Horrible camp for the fight. I was just literally going off pure strength and talent. That's it. I don't want to make excuses. I lost the fight. It kind of woke me up. It was that fight that after that fight, I always put it in my mind, never lay on your back in a fight, because I put George St. Pierre in my guard. And I, first round, man, I threw like 13, 14 submissions at him, and I almost caught him like in 7, 8 of them. So second round was the same, third round was the same. Like when I would go down, it would scramble, I would put him in the guard and try to go for submissions. I would never try to stand back up. And after that, I have never, ever laid on my back. I fought Shoni Carter after that for WEC title. As soon as I would, like, somehow, he never took me down, never. But it was happening when I would throw him and I would land on my back and whatever, I would, boom, stand back up, you know?
Mm-hmm. So were you kind of letting George take you down?
No. I wasn't letting him.
Like going in your guard, I mean?
Yeah, I would let him go in my guard. He would shoot in. As soon as he would shoot in, I would, you know, I took him down, I would throw him, I would do all kinds of stuff, but eventually, you know, he has the wrestling background, so I would end up on my back. And I would pull for submission, because I was a submission guy. But, you know, I didn't do too much stuff, you know. I threatened him, I almost choked him, arm triangle. Even if you hear the commentating, man, I love Joe Rogan to death, but everybody, they're so biased. They're like, Carter's got this, Carter's got that. It was kind of weird. I mean, it played in my favor on the commentating, but not on the scorecard.
Yeah. That's cool. It is an interesting matchup, too. I've kind of always wondered that, like, wrestling versus judo, like the disciplines, because they're so similar in a lot of ways, but then different, too, in a lot of different ways.
Yeah. I wrestled, too, when I was younger. I did wrestle just to get, like, my dad would take us to wrestle so we can get physically stronger on the legs and stuff for some reason when we're kids. But I work with wrestlers. I love wrestling, but I'm a judo fan, man, and I think judo is, for me, works 10 times better than wrestling. In all my fights, I still use wrestling. Double legs, underhooks, single legs, all this stuff. That's the thing. I put combination. I don't do it specifically just judo. I wrestle, too. Like, when I fought Nick Diaz and all that stuff, I still did throws, but it was a lot of them were single, double legs, and I would pick them up and slam them because it came easy. So it's a combination of judo throws and wrestling, you know?
Yep, definitely.
But mostly judo throws.
Carl, what's your favorite, like, story over the years from, like, MMA or, you know, something that happened that, like, you know, listeners might not know, you know, from, like, your firsthand experience? Is there any cool stories that stick out?
Oh, man, there's a lot of stories. There's a lot of, I mean, there's judo stories, there's fighting stories. I mean, what kind of stories are you looking for?
About, like, a MMA story, maybe, like, a UFC or something like that. You had a good one you'd like to share?
Well, the first two, I'll tell you this much. The first two UFCs, when I fought Dave Strasser, when I fought Joe St. Pierre and stuff, there was women trouble, meaning like to a point where friends would get in fight with pimps and stuff, and they were getting a shootout, believe it or not.
Wow.
Yeah, stupid, retarded stories, man. Stupid stuff, but...
oh, shit.
Yeah, a lot of, I passed out when I fought, when I was supposed to fight George GSP, I passed out in the sauna. Dave Camarillo kind of pulled me out. He saw me pass out. I can go on and on, man, about MMA stories. But fights before a fight, brawls before a fight.
Oh, shit. You know? A lot of that goes on?
Yeah, well, I mean.
Not really, as much now.
No, not much now. We don't, I mean, you know, you're professional. I don't really go out before fights, and I can care less about going out. But it's happened where, like, guys, come on, let's go, you know. Like, I was supposed to fight Yoshida, right? Two days before the fight, I pulled my hamstring to my back. Same hamstring, all the way back to my sciatic nerve. I couldn't do anything. And Hackelman, like you just said, I was with John Hackelman outside, and Chuck was right across the street at a bar. And he said, come on, go over there and hang out with Chuck a little bit, get your mind off of stuff, because I pulled out that day and a half, 2 days before the fight. So that's how you go to a bar and you know, lounges and stuff. And I'm telling you, man, we have security always around us, and there's always people that, you know, they look out for you, but there's always that idiot that'll slip by and push you and can tell you to get tough or something, and you got to make an example out of them.
Yeah, they, like, know you're a fighter, and they kind of want to test you or something?
I've had that before. I've had... live, just because, like, me specifically, I don't look like a fighter. Like I just told you, there's bouncers that are looking to your, like, oh man, this guy's got cauliflowers, this guy knows what he's doing. Like bouncers, huge guys, you know, mm-hmm. So they're cool with you. But, you know, average shows, they're like, oh, well, this guy doesn't look like where he looks like a cell phone salesman or something, so. But, you know, like I said, it's happened. I was in Australia. We were in the biggest club, and I came out with the owner from the backside. We had to go to the restroom or something, and I tried to come back in from the front, and I lost. He said, go upstairs, and I got lost, so I had to go turn around and come back to the front, and they had all these rules that, because I have tattoos on my arms, and they're like, oh, well, you got to cover your tattoos up, and I, you know, I had like a tank top on and stuff, because, yeah, I was friends with the owner. And they started, you know, these guys are like 300 pounds, man, 6'5", all muscle. And they started like, well, they started, you know, getting really rowdy and stuff. And one of the guys looked at me and said, oh, man, are you the fighter? I said, yeah. And they're like, oh, man, I'm sorry. You know, we recognize you, but we were like, what's he doing in Australia? So they didn't really think it was me. Mm-hmm. And they literally carried me upstairs like, you know, I don't know, like I was the king or something. Once they found that... Once they find out who you are, man, they're all over you.
Yeah. that's cool, though. At least you didn't have to whoop any ass that time.
No, man, I try to stay away from it as much as I can. There's nothing good comes out of it, you know. It's like,
yeah.
You know, I do that professionally in a cage to make money. That's my profession. That's my job. I don't want to go on the streets.
Yep.
I'm not getting paid for it.
Yeah, exactly. Carl, what's the... what has been the biggest personal struggle in your life, and how did you, like, overcome that?
Biggest personal struggles. It's been within myself, man. You know, when people used to say, oh, I have to find myself. and all this stupid shit. I was like, what are you, a chick? Really? Beside yourself. I never liked stuff like that, like that, you know, touchy bullshit stuff. But it comes a time, when it comes to myself, not towards people, me, for myself, I'm very selfish. I can build something and I can mess it up. I don't give a rat's ass. I do it very selfishly. It's, and I have the kind of personality, either I'm one way or the other. I don't have a middle. I'm never in the middle. Never. I never have that balance. But there's been a couple of stuff I don't really care to talk about it much, but in reality, I've been through a lot of BS in my life. Dude. I mean, a bunch of stuff, a combination of stuff. It's not specifically one thing. It's a combination of stuff. You know, I'll just tell you this. I'll tell you this, and you figure it out. I lived a Hollywood bitter life. That Hollywood celebrity bitter bullshit life.
Yeah.
I did that for a few years, and that was the bad part, and that's what I overcame. Let's just put it that way. Like, gotcha. You know, like a combination of stuff, right?
Yeah.
If you think about it, that's a combination of, you know, going out and doing this and, you know, all this crap, money and all that stupid. That's the combination. So that's what I went through a little bit. It was very tough to get, you know, in the crap and get out. But I did, thank God. And, you know, just looking forward, man. You learn from your mistakes and you try to make the better of it.
Definitely, man. Are you heading, like, in the right direction professionally, personally, in your life, like, right now that you want to be?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I got nothing. It's your best lesson is your last mistake, as they say, and I made a lot of mistakes. And I also made a lot of good stuff too. It's like, you know, you do so good for such a long time, people never remember the good stuff you've done. They always remember the bad stuff. Just because you can win 10 fights and you can lose that one fight and people will talk about that one loss. Because, you know, it's not natural because you're always winning and that one will always stand out. It's just like anything else in life. So, I'm on the right track. I've been on the right track. Training, you know, trying to stay away from trouble, doing everything I can just to, you know, dude, I'm getting older too. I mean, I'm not 22, 23 anymore. I mean, I'm not old. I'm only I'm 32, but at the same time, I'm much mature than I was before. So, everything you do, you know, it's like anything else, just like you and me and everybody else, everybody still makes mistakes. But, you know, you try to do it in a way that it doesn't cost you like it used to. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. So, Carl, who you got coming up fighting next in Bellator?
I don't know. Bellator is all over. So I might do Metamora in a month.
Yeah.
You know what Metamora is?
Yeah, I heard of it.
Yeah, the biggest grappling. It's like there was a tournament called Abu Dhabi back in the days, grappling.
Yep.
This is like the new Abu Dhabi. It's like the biggest grappling tournament in the world in the Gracie zone. So there's one actually Saturday. There's a huge one on Saturday. Chael Sonnen is fighting with Babalu Sobral. It's like a single match. It's like super fights. It's like the biggest grappling tournament in the world. And they want me to do that in a month, most likely. So I'll find out who I'm going to go against and stuff. And you can check me out on Facebook or something. I'll put it up. I don't know, whatever. Or you can hit me up and I'll let you know what I'm doing when.
Yep.
It's interesting.
Yeah, definitely, man. Where is that anyway? Is that in Brazil?
No. That happens in Cali. This one's in Cali too.
Oh, okay.
Huntington Beach. I think Costa Mesa or something. So it's perfect. For me, that's local.
Yeah,
it's happening here because the guy, Hollick Gracie, he's out of, I think Huntington Beach or Pismo, I don't know, somewhere around those beach areas. So, yeah, it's going to be local most likely, but...
All right, guys, I think it's the perfect time to take a quick break from the episode to remind you to subscribe to our show. By subscribing, you get every single episode completely free. That's right, get all of our best interviews with the best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and entrepreneurial worlds absolutely free. Don't miss out on any one of our captivating and exciting episodes. Subscribe now and get all of the Elite Man podcast anytime and anywhere. And yes, if you get a chance, leave us a glowing review about how much you love the show and how awesome we are. Okay, guys, back to the episode now.
Where are... where do you see yourself going in the next few years? Like, what are your goals, like, in mixed martial arts? Do you have anything left that you want to accomplish before you kind of hang up the gloves, so to speak?
Yeah. Hell yeah. To think about it, I still want to, I think the title from Bellator, which I can in a heartbeat, or the UFC. I mean, with all the respect, I think very highly of Robbie Lawler. He's a great fighter. He's a good guy, you know, but at the same time, I mean, I keep on telling myself Robbie Lawler is the world heavyweight champion in the UFC. And I'm pretty sure I can, you know, come to it, get in shape, I can beat Robbie. Robbie's, like I said, man, very tough. Robbie's one of those guys that he when he fights, he has nothing to lose. He always fights like, you know, like a beast.
Yeah,
but like I said, at the same time, there's like three guys I beat that beat Robbie. Nick Diaz rocked out Robbie Lawler. I mean, like I said, that has nothing to do with anything. Styles makes fights and matchups.
Yeah, totally.
Even even Bellator. I mean, like I said, these guys are great fighters. There's a lot of great fighters. I have a lot of confidence in my skill set and what I can do. And I think the fight game has evolved a lot, and a lot of fighters, especially welterweights, man, they've got to a different point. But like I said, man, I think I still have the skill set. When I was fighting in the UFC, I don't know if I'm giving you too long of answers here, man. You can
No, these are awesome, man. Keep going, brother. Keep going.
When I was fighting in the UFC, and I would do interviews, and they would ask me, oh, can they stop your judo? Can they do this? I was like, let me tell you something. And this is a freaking fact. And I can, it's a fact for myself, and I can prove it that it's a fact. I am light years ahead with my skill set when it comes to judo and stuff than anybody that fights in the UFC. All these guys that I fight, everybody that I fought, they're like, oh, we can stop his throws. And nobody even came close. The people that said, he can't throw me, I threw him easily. Way easier than the guy before. So, to answer my own question, I guess, for myself, man, my skill set is strong enough to beat any of these guys, and I know I can. My judo is always going to be there. But like I said, like my last couple of fights, few fights in the Bellator, I knocked guys out. I knocked out Phil Baroni. Again, I know Baroni for a long time. He's a tough guy. Yeah, he's not the same and this and that, but Phil Baroni is a boxer and a wrestler. I wasn't supposed to knock him out. At best, I was supposed to. The experts predicted me to beat him either with a dominating decision or by third round, maybe in the third round, take him down and maybe submit him. I knocked him out in a minute 21 seconds in the first round. Two minutes 6 seconds in the first round. He never even touched my face. So I'm trying to show everybody, obviously the welterweights, wherever the fuck they are, that I can knock you out, come close to me, I can throw you, go on the ground, I can submit you or ground and pound the crap out of you. So wherever you go, I'm comfortable. I'll tell you this, and you can give me a few more questions if you want. Not one person, 10,000 people around me, athletes, coaches, friends, family, bro, just people up to you know what, have always told me, you know, with Carl, with you, it's never about, oh, if you work on your stand-up or if you work on your left kick or your arm bar or whatever, you can do really good. They've always told me that when it comes down to it, if you want it, you can do it. If you want it, you can get it. Meaning, like, it's about being ready or not. If you're in shape, you could beat anybody. And I think there's a lot of people that'll agree with me. If you don't agree with me, you're a fucking hater. I know you're a fool for a fact. If you think about it and you watch my fights and you know anything about my career, is if Carl comes in shape, he can do it. That's okay. If I come in shape, I can beat anybody, which I plan on, and I've been doing. You know? Does that make any sense?
Definitely, man, yeah. You got all the tools. It's pretty obvious when you watch your fights. So would you say then it's just kind of a matter if you want it, like your conditioning part, if you put the work in before the fight?
Yeah, that's about it, if I want it or not. And that's, people like to just already do it, you know? Don't mess up. Just get out there, do what you have to do. You know, and it's, like I said, for me, it's about if I want it, I can do it. If not, then I'm gonna bite the dust. But I can. I know I can for a fact, man. And enough is enough, you know? There was fights that I lost where I was like, Jesus Christ, how the hell? I went through a lot of crap in my personal life. I mean, everybody knows, you just don't want to mention it, you know. Pain medication stuff, that kind of started going into my life a little bit when I told my hamstring. I didn't know what the hell it was. You know, money. I was married for a couple of years. No kids, got divorced. You know, dude, just when I said the Hollywood stupid bitter life, I meant that. That's what it was. You know, go to the Playboy Mansion, go to this club, go out with that chick, go do that stupid stuff. But yeah, it just, when you start making the money, a little bit of money, obviously for a fighter, not for a freaking A celebrity level. Just, you know, like for a fighter, you start to make a little bit of money. You have a significant name. People know you. Actors know you. Actresses know you. They give a crap about you. People, wherever you go, people, especially in L.A., I'm an L.A. guy. It was, you know, whether you want it or not, you know, whether you're the nicest guy in the world or an asshole, your head actually starts to get big. You know, it starts to fucking get big, and all of a sudden, you know, you get stuck on your head. You're like, shit, you know, I gotta pick everything up and get on the track again. It's just like anything else. I just didn't want to become a statistic. So I picked up everything, put it back together again, and got on the right track, you know?
Yeah, definitely, man. It kind of brings up a good point, actually, now that you say that. I'm sure you've heard John Jones in the news recently.
Yes. Yeah.
Do you kind of think he's going through something like that right now?
Not think. I'm pretty sure he is. I mean,
yeah.
Dana, UFC were like, oh, it's just, it was his last chance and all this stuff, which I understand. He got caught for cocaine. He got caught with, I don't know, they said pot or whatever. It is what it is. It's the guy, it's his business. He can do whatever he wants. It's nobody's business. But there's a contract with, when you fight for a UFC and you're the champion, you got a contract with these people that you can't do this stuff because you're a public figure, just like mine. Mine was publicized big time, man. I was on Fox Sports Top 10 Shocking Moments in Sports number 7 when I got fired from the UFC. It's sad. There's 10,000 people going through what I went through, or what John's going through, what anybody goes through. Nobody gives a rat's ass because it's a normal thing. But when you have a name, you're a public figure, everybody starts to talk about you. It's just like anything else. You're a celebrity. You become a celebrity, anything you do. And plus, I mean, I want to add one more thing. Even in John's situation right now, once you do something, let's say Justin is driving down the street and you are a celebrity, you have a name for yourself, whatever it is, and you bump the car in front of you, right? You got a little fender bender.
Mm-hmm.
They will make that into the biggest thing. Oh my God, Justin got in the biggest crash. The person in front of him almost died. He was drunk. Justin was drunk. They'll make a whole fucking story behind it because they need stories. That's what happened with John a little bit. I know for a fact ESPN ripped a new asshole on me, bro.
Really?
Fox Sports. All these people, they need stories, and they love stuff like that. They love drama. On the Ultimate Fighter 5 finale, I got into an argument thing with Nate Diaz. I don't know if you know about this or not.
I actually saw that, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Everybody, they made the Spike, made me, or was it, I don't know, was the Ultimate Fighter or something, made me look like a douche. Like I was a bully and I was the biggest ass, but I wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
That's what TV shows. Nobody knows what exactly happened. So what you see is what you can't always believe. It's the power of TV. It's the power of, you know, the media. That's just the way it is.
Yeah.
So I don't know, man. I think he's going through some crazy shit also, and he'll be fine. I just hope he just picks, because John's a nice guy. I know him. He's cornered me for a fight. We've talked. We actually had a bet who would get the better throw and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
When we fought in the same card. He's a good guy. I hope the best for him, you know? It's just unfortunate that shit like this happens.
Yeah. And like you said, they kind of just blow shit out of proportion.
I
bet on the Ultimate Fighter that they probably only showed like 5% or 10% of the whole thing that actually happened. And like you said, they make you look like an asshole. And
yeah, they made me look like the biggest douche. And You know what? I'll tell you this. What I'm telling you, you can look up and look. Yeah, Carlos is right. I'm telling you, straight back. You can check it out yourself. All the way, I just fought Josh Borkman. And that episode hadn't aired yet. And I was the nicest, most liked Walter Reed. Oh, my God, Carlos is the best. I was very humble, very nice. I still was. As soon as that stupid shit aired, I became the bad boy. I became the asshole. People, like, when they were talking about predictions, they were like, oh, by the way, if you see him on the street, don't look at him because he might be looking for somebody else and beat you up. They would talk shit. I swear. And I got so pissed. I called Sherdog. I'm like, put me on the radio right now. I want to fucking get on the radio and make something clear. I went off. I'm like, you idiots. You know, I'm sorry. I'm an emotional guy myself. I can't hide anything. I told him, I'm like, dude, first of all, you guys are calling me a bully. Where I come from, okay, I don't care if you're that could have been Cain Velasquez, that could have been Fedor. You disrespected me, I was going to get you a face to fucking slap you. I don't care about size. It's about right or wrong. I'm an Armenian kid from Armenia. It's just the way we were brought up. You fuck up, you're going to get dealt with. So I didn't give a shit about that stuff. We just never cared. But they portrayed me as the bully. Because why? I'm a 170 and Nate was a 55er? I was being a bully? What does it have to do with anything? I don't know, man. It's just, when you think about it, just it's kind of stupid.
And, yeah, like you said, it's 170, 155. There's like no real difference anyways.
No, there's no difference. He's taller than me. I mean, listen, I don't really understand the bully factor and what a bully means, but I wasn't trying to be a bully. I was just being disrespected, and I kind of made him understand that. Listen, man, I know you're joking or whatever, but we're in front of the cameras. Watch your fucking mouth. And he stands up. He stood up. He was on the ground sitting there. He stood up. He walked all the way next to Manny, my so-called cousin, and then he started going gangster on me. I was like, you were right next to me, dude. Why did you walk all the way over there and put your, you know how him and Nick kind of that fisting, that, you know, like, what's up, homie, and that stupid face they make? Like,
yeah, right?
He started doing that. I'm like, are you your fucking mind, dude? You're going gangster on me, you stupid dumbass. And that's where I lost my fucking head. But whatever. You know, I actually, when Nick fought Anderson Silva, I was in Vegas. I went to Vegas to check out the fights. I was at the weigh-ins. And Nick and Nate came out. Nate came up, said hi, you know, and then, because after that incident, man, every time I would see him somewhere, it was just, eyes would lock on him with tension, bro. We almost got in a brawl 3 times. After party, UFC, in the hotel room, you know, it was just like, what are you looking at? It was just boom. But he came up, said hi. Nick came up, said hi. I gave him a hug, told him good luck and stuff. You have to understand that when we're getting older, we don't have time for this stupid shit. You know, this is just high school stuff. But, you know, since it came to it, I'm just telling what happened.
Who is the tougher Diaz? Is it Nate or Nick?
Nick. I would say Nick, man. Nick is smart. You know what? I always thought Nick was stupid or something, but he's not, bro. Nick is actually pretty smart. Nick is one of those guys that'll throw a bone in front of you and see if you bite that fucking bone. If you do, yours or his. He's one of those guys that'll throw, like, I would win a fight, and I beat Dong Young Kim, and it wasn't that exciting. And I was walking in the dressing room, and he would like, you gotta work out. I was like, what? He was, congratulations. Like, he would throw stupid stuff out there, like, you gotta get in shape. And I was like, what'd you say? You know, Nick has that stuff. You know, like, I would get on the scale, I'm a little too heavy, like, you gotta stop eating chili dogs. I'm like, I don't eat chili, motherfucker. And then tension would start, you know?
Yeah.
Just, but I like him. I've always liked Nick Diaz. How do you not like Nick Diaz, dude? I mean, look at him. He's in the cage. He'll flip you off. He'll slap you. How do you not love that? I love that shit, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Nate tries to be his brother. Nick is the original.
Yeah, you can tell, actually. I mean, he kind of copied. He came after him. He's younger. He kind of copied his style and everything.
Yeah, right?
Started flipping off people as his career went on. All right, man. Is there anything you would do differently if you had to, like, redo your career over? I mean, besides the obvious, like, mistakes that, you know, you've made and everyone else makes, is there anything you'd, like, change? Or maybe you wouldn't even take this career path in fighting. Is there something like that that you would, like, drastically change?
Well, you pretty much, in the beginning, said it, like, besides the obvious. Put that aside.
Yeah.
Honestly, I'll tell you what, the more the sport went on, the more, you know, we got into fighting and stuff and all this stuff and you know, everything that came with it, I was always telling myself, dude, I wish I had the same success in football, in baseball, in basketball, in tennis, whatever. Whatever had gazillions of dollars coming with it, you know. I wish I had this kind of success in another sport, you know. But no, I'm not tall enough to be a basketball player. I'm not big enough to be a football player. But I don't know. I think there's not much I would have done different besides the obvious. Like you said, I'm just probably the obvious, you know, understanding. Mm-hmm. The mistake. Because if I hadn't made my stupid mistakes like I did before, man, I would have been somewhere else. I would have had a title by now of at least 5 to 10 times. I could have, you know, and I wouldn't be in a situation I am today. Let's just put it that way. That's for sure. So besides, you know, just the obvious, I would change. Nothing else, not much, man. You know, fighting has its own reward. I think being a fighter already has its benefits. It's got its pros and it's got its cons. But at the same time, you know, when they ask, what do you do? I'm a basketball player. What do you do? I'm a model. And then when I ask, what do you do? You're like, oh, I fight. Or I fight in UFC. People lose their mind. Whoa, you actually do that? It's a big mm-hmm. deal. And it's that moment that kind of makes you feel a little bit more special, original, just because. And especially, yeah. like I said, with me, man, people say, no, don't say that. Don't think that you don't look like a fighter. I'm like, yeah, I mean, I can't bust my ass. If I don't look like a fighter, I don't look like a fighter. You know, when I get in shape, yeah, they're like, oh, you look like you. People, dude, you'll die. You will fucking die when you find out what people on the street sometimes. Like, I'll have a friend, and he'll have a friend, and a friend doesn't know who I am, right? Mm-hmm. Whatever. He's not even Armenian, I should say. He doesn't know who I am. And he's about 160, you know, like an average show, a guy that's mm-hmm. a computer geek or something. He'll look at me and say, yeah, I think you can take that guy. They actually think they can take me, you know, and here I trained with Randy, and I would throw Randy sometimes out of the ring if I, you know, I'd be like, I would train with the best in the world and I would, you know, come on top.
Yeah.
Average guys on the street and can kick my ass. And everybody else will die laughing, like, oh, yeah, you're fucking dying, you have no idea. But whatever, I don't really care about that, man. Today, like I said, you know, it's about me training, you know, stay humble, man. I mean, I naturally have that stupid cockiness. I have that, you know, arrogance, which is every fighter does, man. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Tell me one guy that doesn't. It's like a tumor, it grows in you. You can be arrogant. Not arrogant. There's a very thin line between confidence and cockiness, and there's a lot of people who mistake that. But whatever, mm-hmm. I'm arrogant sometimes. I'm cocky, but I'm not an ass towards people. I can tell you that much.
Mm-hmm.
When people say hi, I don't just brush them off. I don't do stupid stuff like that. I get fans every fucking day when I go somewhere. Anywhere I go, I'll get one or two fans, and I'm always nice. I always take pictures. I always do whatever they want. I'll find shit, you know. I don't know, man. It is what it is, I guess.
Yeah. It's yeah, you're right. I mean, you're going to have a certain level of cockiness if you have a fighting background and you're as accomplished as you are anyways. You got, you know, titles and stuff and everything. How could you not be confident, at least in yourself and what you've done? And, you know, so there's nothing wrong with that, I don't think.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people don't see it that way. So it's a struggle. It's just the way it is, man. It is what it is. You just got the way I have to do.
Absolutely. Caro, is there any last takeaway message you'd like to leave our listeners?
No, I mean, you know, if we get judged very easily, and we're all hypocrites. I am too, and everybody else. We like to give the advice, we never actually follow it, and we all judge in a matter of a second. I don't think people should judge that easily, you know? There's a lot of fans, a lot of people that follow me and stuff, and I appreciate all of them. It's an honor sometimes to have big time fans and people care about you and actually give you a place in there, you know, whatever. But there's not much I can say. I just appreciate everybody that supports me. I thank you guys for the opportunity for the interview and stuff. No matter how many I do or what happens, I'm always ready for it. Anything for the media, for people not to think anything bad of me. So I always try to put the good stuff out there, you know? So I appreciate it.
Thanks, man. So guys, is there any place they could, our listeners can check you out at, carlparisian.com, anywhere else? You got a Facebook or anything?
Yeah, there's a lot under my name. Facebook, 120 Facebooks under my name, but there's the one that's the one I kind of follow my age and stuff. It's me winning the WC title. I'm like, I have the belt behind me and stuff. That's the one I kind of follow. And then Carl Parisian Instagram too. They can go on that. And obviously carlparisian.com.
All right, cool, man. Guys, please check that out. carlparisian.com. Check them out on Facebook, Instagram. Carl, thanks again, man, for coming on. I really appreciate it. It's been a really great interview, and I know our listeners are really going to love this one.
Oh, thank you, man. I appreciate the opportunity. I love doing interviews. I don't pull any punches. And like I said, I appreciate it, man.
All right, guys. I hope you enjoyed that episode. But before you go, there's one last thing I need you to do. I need you to subscribe to this podcast right now if you haven't already. By subscribing, you get every single episode completely free. That's right, get all of our best interviews with the best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and entrepreneurial worlds absolutely free. Don't miss out on any one of our captivating and exciting shows. Subscribe now and get the Elite Man Podcast anytime and anywhere. And yes, if you get a chance, leave us a glowing review about how much you love the show and how awesome we are. All right, guys, that's it. Until next time, take care.